Do you want to know how the next generation of hustlers are turning their dreams into dollar signs? I'm Matt James, and this is Riser Diaries from TurboTax Studios, where we get real about money moves being made by today's boldest game changers breaking barriers and redefining what success really means. We're talking about the rise, the grind, and all the ups and the downs on the path to making it big. Hey, Riser Nation. Today, we are gearing up for a sprint through the journey of Paralympian Hunter Woodall, a true trailblazer. From scoring a historic NCAA Division I scholarship to co-founding his company, Giant Hoodies, Hunter's story is filled with grit, setbacks, triumphs, and some serious money moves along the way. What's going on, Hunter? Appreciate you joining the show.
Thanks for having me, man. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here, bro. Your track speed is unparalleled, and I know this because I've gotten to watch you train, and I've had the pleasure of actually getting to train with you. But before you were a world-class athlete and an entrepreneur, you were just a kid from Syracuse, Utah, training and wrestling with your brothers. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in Syracuse, Utah?
Yeah, for sure. You said like, and then you were just a kid at one point. I'm like, yeah, weren't we all? Like, that's kind of funny. That's where we all come from, you know, like humble beginnings. But I was in a military family. My dad was in the Air Force. So we actually moved around quite a bit. So I was born in Georgia, and I'm actually a double amputee, and I lost both my legs. I had them amputated in Florida and then moved around a little bit more until I ended up in Syracuse, Utah. And really, like, it was a good place to grow up. You know what I mean? Like, it was good people. There was like good things to do. It's really beautiful. A lot of nature. It was very comfortable. So I was mostly focused on like keeping up with my older brothers and, like you said, like playing sports and just having fun with my friends and just like, you know, trying to live a normal life, really.
If I was to ask your brothers who the best athlete in the family was or is, what would they say?
I mean, come on, man. You don't got to ask, you know. No, but I think each of my brothers are like really good at different things. My oldest and middle brother are like a lot bigger than me, size wise, maybe not height, but so they're playing like football, and I was riding the bench in football. So, you know, kind of the same thing.
So when did you make that transition? When did you realize that wasn't for you and that you wanted to do something that involved a little bit more speed and a one-on-one kind of session?
It was like a slow progression, honestly. Like, I started running track when I was 10. And it was just like running 5Ks with my family. You know, there's like a turkey trot. We'd all go out there. And on the current prosthetics I had at the time, which were like just regular walking prosthetics, I was like, this is really hard to do. Like, this is not fun. Yeah. So we reached out to the prosthetist, the local prosthetist, and we were like, hey, is there a chance that I can make a running prosthetic so I could do this more easily? And so I was now 11 years old. They made the first pair of running prosthetics they ever had. And I remember just like that feeling of like, wow, this feels great. Like, I feel free. I was just really excited about what I was doing. And from then on, I just kind of like fell in love with the sport, even though I wasn't good at it. It was something that I could pursue and something that like a coach or a team couldn't tell me like, hey, you're not allowed to do this, or you got to sit on the bench. We don't want you to get hurt, because it was really just me, you know, versus the clock. So I found something special about that. But it wasn't until like my sophomore year in high school that I just ran track exclusively.
And a lot of people listening might not know anyone who uses prosthetics. Can you explain to us the difference between a walking prosthetic and something that you use in competition and something that you would be running in?
The biggest difference is like with a walking prosthetic, it's built a lot more around stability. So the ankle is not going to move as much. There's not going to be flexion in the toe, and there's going to be a heel there. So you have something to like lean back on when you're going backwards. Whereas a running prosthetic is literally just one piece of carbon fiber. Like, as Cat Williams would say, it looks like a bent back paperclip. And there's no heel. There's a ton of flexion in the toe. And it's just like a different shape. So there's a decent amount of differences, but you could tell looking at them visually.
Yeah, I could tell when I was watching you train. And one of the first things I thought about was these look extremely expensive. So for the people who don't know how much a prosthetic is, can you walk us through the finances in that?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a serious issue. For me, I got to give a shout out Shriners Hospitals for Children. They took care of me from, you know, the time I had my legs amputated until I was 18 years old. So all those expenses and stuff, you know, they take care of regardless of the family's ability to pay. So that was like a huge help for me. And honestly, the reason that I was able to get into running, because like you said, like the cost of a prosthetic, like if we're talking the sockets, which are handmade by a prosthetist, I mean, you're probably $5,000 to $7,000 for two of them. And then the actual blades themselves are, you know, $5,000 to $7,000 as well. So you're easily like $15,000 to $20,000, which is an absurd amount of money, and especially an absurd amount of money to be like, yeah, let's spend it on this 11-year-old because maybe he might like to run, you know? It's like a lot. So it was challenging, but there's a lot of organizations out there, Challenge Athletes Foundation, that are helping people get these running prosthetics, you know, Shriners Hospital for Children. And then I now run for a company called Oser, who is one of the manufacturers of these blades, which gives me like an easier way to get a hold of this stuff. But another shout out I can give, we actually just recently got a bill passed, my prosthetist Francois in Arkansas, that requires insurance to pay for a secondary leg. So that could be a running leg, that could be a shower leg, that could be, you know, any kind of activity leg. Because previously that's not something that insurance would cover. So it's like a really great opportunity to give people, you know, in my situation or another situation, an opportunity to do that, because it's just so easy to take for granted, you know, what we have, like running.
I can't imagine, Hunter. And it's so wild to look back on your life now when you're saying, you know, this investment that they made in these prosthetics for you. And you're like, yeah, I don't even know if I like running. From going from that, Hunter, to the first double amputee to secure an NCAA Division I scholarship in track. How did that feel?
Honestly, it was super special because I feel like when I look back, I see all the times that people made sacrifices or kind of bet on me to be successful, right? And I felt like they're putting their eggs in my basket and saying, hey, we believe in you and we want to see you succeed. And it was like, then it was up to me to take that and you know, go and make something of myself. So for me, the dream was always to run in the NCAA and to be a D1 athlete. And when I finally signed those papers to Arkansas and I'm finally committed, my scholarship is there and like everything is set, it really feels like, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost. And all of that sacrifice that everyone had made for me had paid off. And it was so much more than just me. You know, it was a celebration for everybody, that everybody could kind of be a part of and feel like, you know, they had a hand in, because they really did. And I say that like so earnestly, that I know I wouldn't be in the position I'm in without the sacrifices and decisions that others had made to get me here.
Yeah. I mean, when you're the first in anything, you're the one that's breaking down the door, you're breaking barriers. And I can only assume that you've had countless other para athletes reaching out to you for advice or to thank you or to help navigate the space.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not just like people that are amputees, but like you said, just Paralympic athletes in general, like people that are going through things, like it's a complicated process, especially when no one's done it. There's not really like a, you know, there's not a playbook for it. So you kind of got to, you know, make up some audibles and come up with some things and just throw stuff at the wall and see what works. So it's been really great to kind of build that community and be an advocate for that community and just be a part of something bigger than myself, you know, to help move things forward for, you know, the Paralympic community in general.
I'm going to fast forward a little bit to 2016 when you were down in Brazil for the Rio Paralympics and you secured two medals. You were the youngest in your classification to do it. How did that securing of the medals affect your sponsorship opportunities?
I mean, the short answer is not at all, because I was going into college the next year. So the NIL rules were still in effect. So I actually had no opportunity to get any sponsors. But funny enough, like going into that meet, like I said, I was the youngest, I was the underdog, I was pretty new to like the Paralympic scene, so I think a lot of people counted me out. And I was really just going like, man, I've been doing this, I just didn't know you guys were doing this over here, so it's time for me to like show you what I got. So it was really exciting, it was so much fun, like I love competing, I love, you know, being under pressure, and that was a blast. But, you know, that did set up a lot of things for me, you know, getting into college, and which set up the sponsorship and partnership opportunities moving forward after college.
I haven't seen many people do it as well as you, being able to balance being an athlete and an entrepreneur. How do you manage both of those things so that you're applying equal time and resources to both?
Man, it's tough. I feel like sometimes I've been better at it than other times in my life, but I think it stems from having a love for what you're doing and have a passion for what you're doing. Because I notice when something in that realm, right, in this whole bucket of things I have going on, when one of them becomes the priority, that is where my time and focus goes. And then I can see the maybe the results of the other things going down or staying stagnant. So I think it's like creating healthy boundaries of these are my priorities and this is what I want to see success in and with what I'm doing, and then planning that accordingly. So for me, that has been like planning out my days better, right? I know I train in the morning. Track is my priority at the moment. So it's like I use my morning to prepare for a really great training session. And then when I'm finished that, okay, now let's see what we can do on social or in business or whatever is after that. So basically plan your day out, plan your weeks out.
Well, if you ask me, it would seem like your priority is creating one of the most comfortable hoodies on the market. I mean, giant hoodies, like where did the inspiration from that come from?
It was actually my buddy came up with the idea. So he owned like a print shop in town where they, you know, people would order, they'd print whatever you want on it and ship it out. And this one time these people ordered these 5XL hoodies and they're massive. And my buddy like put it on. He's like, this is so funny. He, like showed some friends and they're like, that is funny. And because he also owns like a jewelry company. I had met him looking for something to buy my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him about how, you know, I'm in marketing. I love social media. Like, and he's like, dude, I got this crazy idea for a product. I think I could sell them. And I was like, okay, like hit me. And he pitches me this idea. I'm like, yeah, it's not bad. Let's figure it out. So him and I, and then one other buddy who knows how to make a website, like started just duking it out. And I took a bunch of pictures of hoodies on the floor and Photoshopped them out and made a few TikToks. And I was like, all right, let's launch this thing. And that was a start. We made it just with $1,000 and in the closet of this little print shop they had in Fayetteville.
Well, it was amazing. The company grew, and I'm assuming that there was investment put back into the company. What type of investments were y'all making back into the company to ensure that it was going to be successful as you continued to grow?
Every dollar that we made from the company went directly back into it for, you know, at least like the first 6 months of the company, because we were growing so quickly. And through that, there was even times where we had conversations of like, hey, we might need to like find someone to put some money into this, or we can't afford the amount of inventory that we're selling through. Because it was very much like we would buy a bunch of inventory, we would sell all of it, and then we would take all that money and buy a whole bunch more inventory because we had more orders just like piling up. So that was the financial investment. But as far as like a time investment, I mean, it was like, dude, we were thinking about this company 12, 14 hours a day. Yeah. We were doing things like we created this bleach dye hoodie, which is basically where you take a hoodie and you put bleach on it and it creates this really cool like tie-dye pattern. Mm-hmm. And it's like we were the ones out there, like Tara and I were out on a parking garage with two like 40 by 40 tarps, like bleach dyeing like 200 hoodies, like crazy, on top of my apartment parking garage. So it's like, I don't know, you're just riding this high of like building something, creating something, and having fun with your friends and learning. And it was a blast.
I see a theme of hard work, dedication, drive, but with that comes success. And with that success comes a little bit of cheese, some cheddar, some moolah. How did you treat yourself? What did you do when you started to see some success? Did you buy anything? Did you treat yourself to anything?
Oh man, I remember like I had just gotten my first few really big checks from Giant Hoodies. And I was like, this is really cool. And Tara was in town. I was feeling like a, you know, big baller. And we were here for like a long weekend. And she's like, hey, we should go house shopping. I was like, we should go house shopping. So that weekend we went around, started like looking at a bunch of houses just like for fun. And then the last house we saw is this house that I'm sitting in.
You're so lying.
You can connect the dots. Yeah.
I was thinking you were like, oh, I got this nice watch. I went and got, you know, cars. You went and got a house.
Yeah, because, I mean, we knew that we were going to stay in Fayetteville. Like, I mean, maybe not new, but I had a strong feeling that I was going to stay here. It's a great place to train. It's a great place to work. Like, this business is being successful, and it's like, we're happy here. And I'm like, dude, I still got 3 more years in college. Like, why not? I bought some other things. You know, I got a watch.
He said, no, I did get the watch. He said, don't forget about the watch. I got the watch.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Hunter. So you're building businesses. You're selling out hoodies. You're training. But you're also making a lot of money with these brand deals. And that, to me, sounds complicated when it comes to taxes. How did you manage filing? What type of knowledge have you gained on this entrepreneurial journey that you can help out everyone else with?
Man, I learned a lot of really hard lessons through this. I had never even heard what a 1099 was. I was like, what are you talking about? It was like a tough like few years, because like I said, I went from literally, I'm not exaggerating, I'm literally making no money at all, other than like per diem when I'm traveling for the track team, to making like a lot of money relative to myself. Mm-hmm. And I had never had to deal with taxes. I'd never had to deal with any of this stuff. And it all just came to me right at once. And then the following year, because this is the first like full calendar year where I'm making good income, I'm like starting something. It's my second year as self-employed. So that has some implications and things. Mm-hmm. And I got a bad recommendation from someone, you know, who was a part of my team for like a business manager to take care of this. I had this idea that I could just pass this off to a business manager and then I would mm-hmm. never have to think about it and everything would get done. And it was just like easy peasy, right? Mm-hmm. But I kind of learned that like no one's going to care about what you're doing as much as you are. So you got to be, you know, involved. You got to be a part of that, having those conversations. And then when we did that, like we found so many mistakes that were made and like so many like missed opportunities. And it was difficult. It was a hard lesson to learn. But now, especially like going into a new year, like I'm the most competent and I'm in the best position I've been from like a optimizing tax perspective that I've ever been. So that has been like a huge weight off your shoulders, off my shoulders, because it is a really big responsibility that you have.
TurboTax experts make your moves count. Filing with 100% accuracy and getting your max refund guaranteed. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees. Experts only available with TurboTax Live. You mentioned something that I thought was interesting when you said you missed things and you're now going back. And I'm just curious, when I think about your prosthetics, are those things that you can write off? Is that a business expense?
So the crazy thing about our business is, and one of the things like our previous business manager didn't really realize, is we make 100% of our income online through social media mm-hmm. or through partnerships for, you know, running. So it's like, I cannot run without my prosthetics. That is something that generates income. So yeah, it is a business expense. I was just in Italy working on some new prosthetics, and Italian prices are cheaper in healthcare. So I think total to get these blades done was like $6,000. And it's like, dude, that's a great opportunity for me to get something that I really need to compete and not have to have that reaction where I'm like, oh my God, I just spent $6,000, because I can, you know, write that off and use it as a business expense. So it's investing in myself. That's what it is. Like I'm investing in myself.
All right, Hunter, being an athlete and being an entrepreneur go hand in hand. There's a lot of hard work that goes into your training and your focus and your diet and your regimen. And there's a lot of hard work that goes into being an entrepreneur, your focus, your commitment, staying on task, partnership, teamwork with your partners. Do you see that in your own schedule? Does that cross over in your training and in your entrepreneurial pursuits?
I think there is like a lot of lessons that overlap, or things that, for example, in business, like I met a lot of different entrepreneurs who are growing their own company, and I could see how like these little decisions would make big impacts for what they're doing, right? Changing this little thing on an ad, or changing the way their website works just this little bit, or changing the way they're marketing or their cadence, like all these little things that maybe to a lot of people don't seem like a big change, but then end up creating a really big result. Mm. And it's like, I can apply that same thing to my athletic career, which I'm doing right now, is like, man, I can get these, what I call them is free points, right? I can drink 4 liters of water a day. That doesn't cost me anything. And that's a free point. Like that's an easy thing that I can change.
Ooh,
that's going to make a massive result in the long run. So that's something that I've been doing is like anytime I can make an easy decision that's going to help me move forward, I'm going to go ahead and make that decision, even if it doesn't seem like a really big deal, because those little things add up. And on the athletic side, like honestly, I learned how to be a dog. Like I learned how to compete. I learned how to show up. I learned how to, you know, work under pressure. And it's like those things are required when you're growing a business. Like there's times where things are really stressful and there's an issue that needs to be handled right now, or it's going to create like an onslaught of just things that you have to deal with. And it's like, you got to be dialed in and ready to go. And I feel like being an athlete has taught me how to do that. And not only like do it, but do it effectively and like have fun while I'm doing it.
Yeah. So taking everything that Hunter knows now, if we could go back to the very beginning, what is like the number one or top two things you would share with your younger self so that you're not having to deal with the things you're having to deal with now?
The first thing that I would say is like, don't feel like you need to rush it. Like you have so much time. And it's like, I think in this current climate of social media and the internet, we are always having these things come to us of like, hey, you want to get rich? Hey, you want to do this? You want to do that? It's like, there's so many ideas. There's so many places you can put your money. There's so many like things you could do to optimize. And like, there's always something you could be doing better. Right. And it's easy to get caught in this trap of like, oh, I need to do this. Oh, I need to do that. Oh, you know what I mean? You keep like following these things because you think that's the answer. But now looking back, like I realize the answer is like, dude, focus on the thing that is making you money or that is bringing you that success or that is your passion or that you're excited about. And then the rest of the things will kind of figure themselves out. And I've also figured out the best way to build wealth is like the way people have been doing it forever, which is like slowly and safely and like steadily. You know what I mean? Like it's not a race. So I think the second thing would be like, this sounds really cliche, but like enjoy the journey. Like for so many years though, I was on such like a goose chase of, yo, what's the next thing? How can I like continue to optimize this? Whatever it is, you know, athletics or business or social media. And then I look back, I'm like, man, I did so many like really fun, exciting things. And I didn't even get to fully appreciate them because I was so focused on what is the outcome of this.
Yeah, the biggest takeaway I took from that last part was enjoying the journey. And I think that if anybody who follows you on social or has seen any of your content, like that is just like radiant from what you and your wife now, Tara, fellow Olympian, who you both collaborate on branded things, funny things that, you know, you deal with as a couple. And it's just like couple goals. Whenever I see y'all posting stuff, I'm like, babe, we got to do this. Like, look at what they just posted. What's it like being able to work with your wife and someone that you love and you share so many experiences with?
I think you know it as well, but it's great to have somebody that's on board. You know what I mean? Somebody that one is on the same page as you and understands like, whether it's the time commitments or the stress that some of these things bring. And two is just like, just having somebody along for the ride, you know, it's like, it's not always easy. There's obviously a lot of times that, you know, suck for me or her or both of us at the same time, you know, you're going through something. So it's nice to have, you know, that rock there that you can really like, shoot, I'm drowning. I know I have a rock I can grab onto and save myself. So that is really great. But as far as like what we do, one of the biggest parts of our job is traveling. Like we're traveling all over the world for track meets. A lot of track happens overseas and obviously like we're filming all this stuff. So that can be really a lonely thing to do by yourself. Like hotel rooms can get pretty lonely. So having someone to just be there and experience that with and have those memories to share, it's incredible. Like last summer when we were traveling, I had never had more fun with my wife. It's just seeing the world together and doing what we love. So, and I think that shows through in the stuff that we create, you know, the content and everything we create is like a really genuine, you know, example of what we were experiencing in that time.
How do y'all navigate the financial aspect of it? Are those conversations you're having, is it separate? Is it joint? How's that work?
Tara has like the utmost trust in me, which I appreciate so much, but I'm like, maybe we should jump in on these conversations a little more. But how we have it structured is we have one company that runs all of our brand deals and partnerships with both of us together, right? Both of us included. And this company really takes care of all of our expenses, you know, whether it's like paying into a joint personal account that pays for our bills and pays for, you know, the mortgage and things that we just can kind of like not worry about. And we know that the work we're doing together is supporting our life. Mm-hmm. And then we have two additional companies, one mine, one Tara's. And that's like the money you make is your money. So mm-hmm. if Tara does a brand deal on her own and she makes that money, it goes into her account. And then she is to choose what she does with that money. Like I never asked about that money. I never touched that money. And then same with me. So we have, I think, a really pretty healthy separation of like, hey, this is our money and then this is yours and my money. And personally, I believe that you need a little bit of that. Like you need to be able to enjoy money you made or enjoy the hard work that you do. Mm-hmm. Or just even like have that control, because I think we love to see progress. And like Tara's a really great saver. So she continues to save money and then she'll like be like, yeah, I have this much saved. And it's like, that is a really cool experience and a really great way to learn. So that's how we do it. I'm not saying it's the right way to do it, but it's worked out really well for us.
I think the right way is whatever works for you. Facts. And that seems to be working for y'all. One thing I loved that you said earlier was when you were talking about how to build wealth. And I think that most young people in your position can relate to these opportunities that come across their table all the time. Hey, here's an opportunity to 10x your money, or here's a way to get rich. And it's exciting because you're like, yeah, like I want more money. I'm excited. Let's do it. But you defaulted back to real estate. And I know that that's something that is part of your portfolio. So what was that transition like getting into the real estate game?
Funny enough, the first house that I bought was this one. So for me, it was really hard to like get everything taken care of. Like I had a good down payment. I have really good credit, like all these things. But like I'm a 21-year-old and I have only 1 year of self-employment income. And like they're looking for 2 years minimum, like with tax returns. So I was like, I went to talk to these people like, hey, I'm trying to buy this house. Like I was down payment. They're like, no, like hard pass. Like next. So I probably went through like 10 or 12 loan officers, like trying to find somebody that could help me out. And finally I did. And even then it was like, we can't release payments to the builder until there's 18 months of this mortgage paid. So there was a lot of strings attached, but it was like before everything got crazy. So there was a little bit of power to negotiate. But regardless, like, even though that was a difficult situation, I got through it and I was like, hey, that wasn't so hard. Like that was a thought that I had, not like, man, that was ridiculous to get through, but hey, that wasn't so bad. And I was like, I bet I could do this with like other properties. Like, I feel like shouldn't be too hard. I had a lot of cash coming in and not like a ton of places that I knew where I could put it. So I knew that where I live in Fayetteville is growing at like a really exponential rate. And I was like, I feel like this would be a pretty safe place for me to park some money. So I went out and I like identified a property. Man, I just took hours and days like doing as many numbers as I could on this, like using all different kinds of calculators and like online resources to find like ROI and all these things. And I was like, dude, every way I do this, it makes sense. So let's try it out. So Tara and I agreed. We like purchased this property and got it rented and everything was working great. And we're like, hey, this is like not too bad. And that was kind of the start. So like for me, it's always like, what's the idea? Okay, let me try to execute it. And then like, what was the result of that versus the time that it took to do it? And it just was like something that was really fun, like really exciting for us. Just not only like finding a property, but finding things that we can like do to it to improve it, whether it's like just fixing random things or little projects. And now even like we found a love for more like the commercial side of real estate. So we're moving like a lot away from like residential real estate, but that's just a part of like learning. I didn't even know that, you know, commercial real estate was like a thing that you could just go and buy. So,
yep. I mean, building businesses, brand partnerships, residential real estate, rental properties, commercial properties. Is there a specific money move that you think is going to have a lasting impact on your financial future?
I think consistency is going to have a lasting impact. I think being consistent with what we're doing, like I said, I think understanding that there's no like secret sauce, there's no like secret answer, or one thing that's just going to like make you absurdly rich. It's just like the rules that you can live by that I guarantee will bring you wealth in your life is spend less than you make, live comfortably below your means, and then be consistent with some sort of investing. And that could be like $100 a month into the S&P 500. Like there's very simple things you could be doing that if you do it consistently for a long period of time, it's going to like create a positive result. So, and there's tons of resources for all of these things, especially if you're young.
Well, I mean, now that we're forecasting and looking ahead, what's next for Hunter?
We got the Paralympic Games this year, Paralympic and Olympic Games in Paris. So that is where 100% of our focus is, you know, at the moment, all things considered, but 100% of our additional focus is there. Training hard, body's feeling good, healthy. So yeah, it's really exciting.
Well, Hunter, we're all going to be tracking you and Tara's journey into the Summer Olympics this year. I appreciate you stopping by, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, bro. Thanks for having me, man. Good to talk to you.
Give it up for my man, Hunter. I am so impressed and inspired with Hunter's journey from a kid who didn't even know if he wanted to run to a world-class Paralympic athlete. From managing his company, Giant Hoodies, to getting legendary brand deals, Hunter is someone that I know will continue to inspire generations for years to come. Thank you all for joining us this week. And until next time, I hope you guys are on the rise. Riser Diaries is an Intuit TurboTax podcast presented by TurboTax Studios and produced by Frequency Media. I'm your host, Matt James. Our executive producer is Michelle Corey. Our producer is Lizzie Stewart. Our associate producer is Sara Naz Jadbabayi. Concept strategy and development by Michelle Corey and Jessica Olivier. Our engineer, editor, and mixer is Claire Bidigary Curtis. Video editing by Julian Andrew K.A. Thank you.